Our study tonight is out of Isaiah 2:22 and then chapter 3:16 to 4:1. God's judgment for the trust women put in themselves versus the Lord. You remember last week we talked about God's dealing with the men, and tonight's passage, God deals with the women. When God's prophet Isaiah called the nation to stop trusting in man in Isaiah 2:22, one of the great vices that had led to this call was the failure of Judah's women to trust in God versus trusting in themselves. Isaiah 3:16 to 4:1 clarifies this error, providing invaluable insight and an application for us today. I want to read the passage and then we'll look at it. First of all, we'll look at verse 22 of Isaiah 2. Cease ye from trusting in man, whose breath is in his nostrils, for we're in his heat to be accounted of. And then down to chapter 3, verse 16 to 4:1. Moreover, the Lord saith, because the daughters of Zion are haughty, and walk with stretched forth necks, and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go, and make it a tinkling with their feet. Therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will discover their secret parts, the secret parts of the scalp. In that day the Lord will take away the bravery of their tinkling ornaments about their feet and their cauls and their roundabout the tires like the moon. Actually, those are crescent. We'll get into that later. The chains, the bracelets, the mufflers, the bonnets, the ornaments, the legs, the headbands, the tablets, the earrings, the rings, the nose jewels, the changeable suits of apparel, the mantles, the wimples, the crisping pins, the glasses, the fine linen, the hoods, the veils. And it shall come to pass that instead of sweet smell there shall be an odor, and instead of a girdle, a rent, and instead of well-set hair, baldness, instead of a stomacher, a girding of sackcloth, and burning instead of beauty. Thy men shall fall by the sword, and thy mighty men in the war. And her gates shall lament and mourn, and she, being desolate, shall sit upon the ground. And in that day seven women shall take hold of one man, saying, we will eat our own bread, and wear our own apparel. Only let us be called by thy name to take away our reproach. Okay, we're going to have to retranslate some of these words. The King's English is a little far-fetched in regards to what was going on. But this is a very interesting passage of Scripture. The Isaiah 2:22 admonition to stop trusting in man that summarizes the Isaiah 2:6-21 general exposure of Judah's sins also acts to introduce Isaiah 3:1-4:1. And there God focuses on specific sins caused by this errant trust in man versus the correct trust in the Lord. One part of society, its women, had failed Judah, and God's prophet exposed this group's sin in verse 16. The Lord added to his recent critique of Judah's men a critique about the nation's women in verse 16. Specifically, he critiqued their self-sufficient haughtiness or pride. It was expressed in walking about with a stretched-out neck, a posture that in the ancient Near East indicated pride. When a woman would walk around in the ancient Near East with a neck stretched out like that, that indicated pride. Nowadays, we would say with your nose turned up. But the same picture, stretched neck, meant the same thing. So there was pride. Then in this pride, Judah's women at random flirted. The Hebrew word is sakar. And this means to flirt with their eyes as they went about their neighborhoods, leading to a breakdown in morals throughout society as they seduced men who were neither their husbands nor their future husbands. So there's a tendency just to walk around and flirt with just about any man that was out there. Now, that would obviously lead eventually to immorality. And immorality leads to a breakdown in the family. Breakdown in the family leads to a breakdown in the social structure. Incidentally, I believe that this has been a problem in our country for a long time. It starts in Hollywood with the way women are presented as and modeled as dressing and then conducting themselves. And it's gone out through the movie industry, it's come into the magazine industry, and I really believe it's hurt the family structure throughout this country. And so, yes, men are at fault, obviously, because they've gotten involved in sin. But women are also at fault by the way they conducted themselves. And this is where God's dealing with the women's fault. Now, as they walked about, Judah's women tripped along with mincing steps, with ornaments jingling in their ankles to attract attention, so they could begin to seduce men with their flirting eyes and look impressive to people in society as general. In other words, they would wear these bracelets around their legs, even though they had garments that went down to the ankles and so forth, but they would intentionally walk in such a way that the little ornaments would jingle, and that way they would be noticed. And then they'd be noticed, then they could get attention, and then they could flirt with their eyes. So this whole thing is just part of their activity. Well, a day of divine judgment was coming when God would cause their hair, which is the most important glory as a woman has, to fall out, leaving a scab on the scalp and exposing their bare heads to their shame. It is true that a woman is very, very sensitive about her hair, and if she loses the whole thing, that's a crisis that she has. And this is why, you know, when women get treated for cancer and they lose their hair because of the chemo and so forth, they want to wear a wig, which is understandable. It's very understandable. But in those days, they would lose it, and there would be a scalp. God would also take away the finery the women used to make themselves alluring, including their bangles, their headbands, crescent necklaces, earrings, bracelets, veils, headdresses, ankle chains, sashes, perfume bottles, charms, signet rings, nose rings, fine robes, capes, cloaks, purses, mirrors, linen garments, tiaras, and shawls, all the finery utilized to make themselves as women seductive for their selfish ends. See, this is interesting. This is not just a man critiquing. This is the Creator, the one who made women. He understands what they're doing. In place of fragrance, by their use of perfumes, would be a stench produced when invading soldiers seized their costly perfumes. In place of a sash would be an encircling rope that was tied around the waist to use to tie prisoners together in long lines. Instead of well-dressed hair, baldness. Instead of fine clothes, sackcloth, which was worn to express distress. Instead of beauty, branding with hot irons, as they would be marked by branding as prisoners of war. They would, just like they do with cattle, they'd take these brands. They weren't as large as cat that, but they would stick them in the fire, get them hot. Then they would put them right on the person's arm or hand, and it would brand them. Of course, that would be very painful, but that's how they marked people as prisoners. And then they would take them, and then they had the specific mark, and then they would be sold on the market, and so forth, as slave. And that's something that was going to happen. Of course, that would be very distressful. Now, the men with whom they had once flirted would fall by the sword, Isaiah 3:25, and the city represented in its gates would be emptied of inhabitants, so that they would figuratively mourn, sitting on the ground and alone. That's Isaiah chapter 3. Verse 26, interesting, and her gates shall lament and mourn. This is speaking of the city of Jerusalem, and she, the city, being desolate, shall sit upon the ground. What's interesting is that there is an extant coin from Vespasian, this is under Roman times, which pictured the conquered city of Jerusalem as a dejected woman sitting under a palm tree, a Roman soldier standing in front of her, and it bears the inscription, Jerusalem alone. You talk about fulfillment of prophecy, there it was. Well, in fact, wars would slaughter so many men in that day, ultimately in the tribulation days, that women will be willing to be self-supporting if only they can be married and escape the reproach of being childless. And this is why seven women, verse 1 of chapter 4, shall take hold of one man, saying, we will wear our own bread, eat our own bread, and others will support ourselves, wear our own clothes. Only let us be called by thy name. Only marry us and take away our reproach so that we can have children. That's a pretty desperate situation. So in great contrast to the once self-sufficient, flirtatious women of Judah in Isaiah's day, Judah's women would become desperate to be married in order to remove their shame. Big lesson here. And I believe not only for women, but also for men by way of application. God would judge Judah's women for self-sufficient pride that led to self-centered living and immorality, resulting in the undermining of the morals of the men about them and thus of society in general. God would administer this judgment by removing their false crutches of attractiveness in order to humble Judah's women. So, may we men and women alike repent of false pride to rely on God for blessings, especially in the acquisition of a spouse or a marriage partner. And then, may women in particular heed the 1 Peter 3:1-4 admonition to adorn themselves not with an emphasis on externals, but with the hidden person of the heart, a meek and quiet spirit that is in the sight of God a great price. I read that in 1 Peter 3:1 and following. Likewise, ye wives, be in subjection to your own husbands. Notice the emphasis is on your own husbands as opposed to some other man. That if any obey not the word, notice if any of your husbands are not saved, they may also, without the word, be won by the manner of life of the wives, while they behold your chaste manner of life coupled with respect. Whose adorning, let it not be the outward adorning of plaiting of the hair and wearing of gold or putting on of apparel. What they would do, they would sprinkle gold dust actually in their hair. And that was expensive, and the Bible forbade that. But let it be the hidden man of the heart, in that which is not corruptible, even the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit, which is in the sight of God a great price. And this doesn't mean a woman can't make herself attractive. It doesn't mean that she can't wear decent clothes. But the focus should be on her attractiveness as a person, quality of her character, not just the looks themselves. Looks are one thing, but there has to be something much more permanent than that. Much more winsome than that, and that would be the person. And that's what God is after. Incidentally, just a hint to you young ladies who aren't married yet. Men do not respect women who are flirtatious. They think that they're somewhat immoral, and that's the last kind of a girl a good man would want to date or want to marry. A good man is looking for a girl who is really chaste, because that's the kind of woman he wants as his wife. He doesn't want someone who's playing the field. So actually, you help yourself out as a young woman, and a young man too, if you make sure that you draw the line and live a really upright life. Now, may we men and women not flirt with the opposite gender to obtain a spouse, an activity that is not only sin of the sensuousness, but attracts the wrong kind of a partner. That's true. But humbly trust God for the quality spouse of his provision, as in the case of Isaac's acquisition of Rebekah. It's interesting in Genesis 24, and I've put the passage down there. You remember the event there. Abraham sent a servant out to look for a wife. And he prayed that God would send the girl his way and that she'd be willing to feed his camels and so forth. Well, Rebecca showed up, very beautiful girl, but she was the one that showed up and demonstrating her character when the man asked who she was. She told who she was, and then she was going to give a drink, and she fed all his camels, which would have been a tremendous amount of work. We figured she would have had to fill up the camels that he had. It would have probably taken close to 200 gallons of water, which is, should have been up and down. This is one of those wells where you take the steps and go all the way down to the water. But she worked very, very hard, which demonstrated she was physically fit. She was also very hospitable. There's quality, the character in this young woman, besides her attractiveness. And it's interesting that the man's testimony is, I being in the way the Lord led me. I can tell you many, many stories of people who were busy serving the Lord and the Lord led them. One year, years ago, there was a young man in our church who decided to use some time by being a missionary. So he became a missionary part-time to South Africa. We wonder who he was. But before he left, I talked to him. I said, you know what, Dave? I think it's going to be wonderful to see what the Lord does in your life through this. Now, I wasn't thinking about him meeting his partner in life. I was thinking maybe he's going to be a missionary. Well, he went over and had a great time, came back and reported, and then he wanted to meet me privately, and he says, you know, you talked about the Lord might really do something for me. And he says, I think he has. I think I've met my marriage partner. And I said, what? He says, yeah. So, that's neat. But I think it's wonderful. Dave did not go to South Africa looking for a marriage partner at all. I don't think that was anywhere in his mind. I know it wasn't. He went there to serve the Lord. But as he went to serve the Lord led him to a marriage partner. I think that's wonderful. And that's the way, if we busy ourselves with God's will in our lives, he'll bring the partner along that he wants us to wed, and everything will work out. And that's really the way it should be. Going the way that the women in Israel at this particular time, and Judah at this particular time, were going in regards to relating to men was all wrong. It was all sinful. There's a wrong way to go about it. The right way is to follow the Lord and live a life that is chaste and let the Lord open the door. And he will. He will. He cares about us, and he will open the door for us.